right. Welcome, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show. I am Joe Danier, and this is your show where we get to talk about things that are happening in technology. We started this show way over a decade ago. I think we way into the early 2000s, and we've been doing the purpose of. Let me tell you why we do this. Some things that I kind of felt bad early on in our operations, because a lot of you really wanted to do this stuff, and you didn't have a problem. But there was nowhere really to go to learn how to do this stuff. I mean, you could go to the library and take a class and learn how to click around a little bit, but you wanted to do more than that. You wanted to be practical. So we set up a venue so that when you had something that wasn't just fixing your computer, that you could ask questions to put yourself on a path, right? If you're interested in something, sometimes all you need to be able to do is sit down and talk to somebody for a little bit who knows what they're doing. And they could put you on a path. You don't necessarily. We love doing stuff ourselves, so it's not even something that you want to offload to anybody. But it's just helpful sometimes if you hear the language that's used and the words, because that's what keeps a lot of you away from this. Is that tech people have a language all of their own. They use a bunch of words that you don't understand. They use a bunch of letters in place of words, and it's confusing. It's a little intimidating because they speak so fast about it. And they're a little dismissive and condescending when you don't understand. So it intimidates a lot of you from trying. So this is a non-judgmental stage here where you could talk about things a little bit more vulnerable. And I'll do my best to help you with something that you might have. We talk about sometimes very bland topics like, hardware and software. Doesn't really lend itself to be exciting radio, but it's every once in a while it needs to be done because you're the consumers of this stuff, and it's what's important to you, and you need to hear it every once in a while. I'm spending a great deal of time on the security side of things. I have a neighbor, Paul, owned a security firm, and he got to see this stuff every day. So when he would have conversations and what he would post on Facebook was important, what he saw other people and what they were faced with on the daily. So he felt that he needed to tell people when he saw someone lose a bunch of money or get their financial credibility hijacked by someone else, it was important to him that he let people know about it. That's sort of the same philosophy, is that when I see people get hurt, maybe if I tell the story that I can save one or two of you from being hurt in the same way. If you follow me on social media, I'm doing scam baiting. What this is tech people have vowed to go waste time of people who scam other people. And so my goal is that I'm going to waste at least 30 minutes from a scammer. I'm going to talk to them like I'm just a regular consumer and get them on the phone with me so they're not on the phone with you. And so far, we've done 2 weeks of it. We've talked to probably over 15 different scammers. We've published out the results of those scam calls on our YouTube channel. And they've been pretty exciting. The last one that I did, there was a couple of them that we were just kind of over the top. They were surprising. They made for, they were exciting. But the last one that we did, the last one that I posted was vanilla. Like, this is how they go down. And all I did was go through the hoops with them, and I talked the talk with them, and they took me textbook right through start to finish. It's probably I went according to every script that was sitting in front of them. And it's not necessarily a con job. Like, they're not cold calling. All they are is responding. But I stumbled on a moment in that scam where I actually found another scam that I don't know if they've tried. They should probably try it. It'd probably be effective. So onto this vanilla scam, I went to a website, and the website did not look nothing like eBay's website. And it was basically a white page. It had green lettering. It had some kind of weird logo on it. And it said, eBay customer support, call this number. Now, there was nothing deceptive about it. I don't know why it said call eBay's. I don't even know what context would have allowed me to get to that page. But it said call eBay's customer support number. So I was interested to see what that meant, what I'd have to do to get on that hook. So I loaded up a virtual machine, and went to eBay.com, and I went to a fan, right? Because now my narrative was that it's hot here in Atlanta, Georgia, and I need a fan, and I tried to go to eBay, and when I was at eBay, the screen came up, and I want to know why you want, I'm trying to buy this fan, and now it says to call customer service, and here I am. So it was a pretty good setup. I mean, not real dynamic, but enough for them to, see if they take the bait or not, and they did. But when the setup happened, so I called the number, and the first, it was a lady, and usually these scams are not ladies. So this was different. So a lady picked up, and she said, "This is, you know, eBay, can I have your whatever?" And because it was a woman, I was like, something's odd about this one. But what I noticed is in sort of like the depth of my hearing, you had her on a clear line, right? A clear phone connection. But there was also like a windy connection. And my first guess was that I called a number, and because there was a delay, when I called the number, I was like, hello, 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 hello. And I called them, but so they picked up, I heard the windiness, and then I was like, hello, hello, hello. And like maybe 15 seconds after I said my first hello, then the girl picks up. So I was talking to the windy connection, and then she was on the non-windy connection. That's when it occurred to me. I said, oh, this is a new one. This is where she's actually with eBay, and they are sitting on the phone call, because I called them and then they called eBay, and now I'm with eBay. So if I share information with this person, they're actually eBay, and the person listening in might be able to glean something from the conversation about the details to use somewhere else. So I was in on this. That's where I thought we were going. And honestly, there was an intermediary, but the girl on the clean part of the phone conversation was not eBay legitimate. And they never asked me to do any eBay logins or passwords or anything else. So that was kind of like a wasted part of what they had. A better implementation of the scam would be to get me to say stuff to legitimate eBay, and then they could have had it. But I wasn't on that call. So what they did do was the girl was a setup person. Her only objection or obligation, or what her job was to do, was to get some remote access set up on my computer, and then say that the billing department will call me back. All right. So she was not really technically savvy. So I got to waste about 20 minutes of her time getting the remote access set up on my computer. And by the end, you know, it was like she didn't know what was going to be on my screen. So I slow played it and played stupid a little bit. And it just took a really long time to get virtual, or it took a lot of time to get the remote access on my virtual terminal. So as soon as that happened, and I think what's happening is the strategies are evolving, because there's enough of us that are wasting these people's times that then they have to sort of filter out the people who are just jacking with them to get to people who they can really scam, because we're putting a lot of pressure on their structure and wasting all of their time. This is a unified effort. This is just not Joe. This is a lot of technical people who have vowed to put some time in to pull this off. So she hangs up. She says somebody's going to call me back. And about, I don't know, a minute later, someone different calls me back, and I patch him into the same call. I kind of stayed on the line until they called back and patched it in. And now this guy was the serious guy. There was no joking. There was no, this was, you know, hey, here's the problem. You're trying to do this thing. It's going to cost you $100. Here's what I want you to do. And I just went through the whole thing. It got me to the point where it was time for payment. So what he did was he lowered the price of the fan, right? So let me go back a little bit. So a couple of the things that they do is they get you on there, but they're able to black out your screen and do things without you being able to see them. It's one of their products that they use that hides what they're doing from the consumer. And so they could have been, I couldn't see what they were doing. So they could have been scanning to see if I had a Windows open that had any data. They could have been looking to see if I was on a virtual terminal, because I did nothing to hide the fact that I was on a virtual terminal. Well, if I'm just dumb consumer, I'm not going to be on a virtual terminal, and that will be a giveaway that I'm just jacking with them, and they might just hang up on me at that point. They're going to look around and see if they can maybe change or look for passwords or bank accounts, and there was none of that. This was a very vanilla profile that I have set up on my virtual terminal, so I don't know what they were doing, but they probably didn't get much. But they could have maybe planted some software on there that gave them access later on, so that might still even be in the deal. So anyway, he gets me through this whole process where he needs me to give him some money. I tell him that my credit's not real good and I don't have any credit cards and I need to buy from eBay. So he gives me the challenge of going to Target and buying a $100 gift card, and then giving him the $100 gift card, they would manually send the process through. And so I thought if I do that, like if they're not willing to like go with me, if they're just gonna like call this number back, I'm not going to have anything to call back with, and that's going to waste. I want to see what if I can do something to waste some more of their time. So I thought, hey, I have a gift card that might have enough on it already. Would you mind if you waited? So I put them on hold and, you know, kind of slow played it a little bit, and I got to the 30-minute mark. So remember, I was only with this second guy for 10 minutes, 20 for the first girl and 10 for the next guy. And so I pulled off my 30, and I came back. I said, hey, I just want to let you know, I'm just jacking with you on this. I'm trying to waste 30 minutes of your time. And I, you know, gave him a couple of fiery language bombs, and then he hung up on me and was done. But that's like the prototypical of wasting some of these scammers' time. They get irritated. They get shorted with me. They get frustrated, and that's exactly what I want to deliver. And I've played different roles. I've played the I don't know any better role, and then the super aggressive yell at you role, and they're equally effective. They don't like to hang up on people. They just switch roles, that if you get aggressive, then they do the empathetic scam. And if you get really, I'm an old person, don't know what I'm doing, then they just, you know, leverage your ignorance against you and take that role. So they're pretty dynamic as far as how they're going to scam you and switching in and out of that roles. Every once in a while, like I did not have a good working number when I made one of these calls. And so I just pulled one from a database that some of these, my colleagues were ganging up on. And when I called, they were already irritated that people were calling that number. And they started right out of the gate, just belligerently just throwing F-bombs at me and asking me where I got this number and saying stuff about my mom. And they tried to get me going. And that was probably the one most entertaining ones, because I my job was to waste the time. So I just tried to keep them going, even if they're mad at me or whatever. I tried to keep them going on that for a half hour. I got 20 minutes out of them, and they knew what was up from like second number one. So 330-729-9977. Let's go to Joe. Joe, you're on the Youngstown Computer Show. How can I help you?
I just love what you're doing with these scammers. That's just wonderful.
Oh, thank you.
Now, give me a quick rundown. I'm going to ask the question and hang up and listen.
Sure.
On a virtual machine and how you set it up and what the advantage of it is.
Okay. All right. Yeah, you think about a virtual machine as in like a computer within a computer. We use them for stuff like this, where if we are doing stuff that might be dangerous, we're opening an attachment in an area that might be dangerous, we set up a virtual machine. So if we break it, we break the virtual version of it and not the one that's living outside of the computer. And so it's a little sandbox where you're a little bit more free to play with things without worrying about it destroying a computer, or, you know, your computer's private. There's some stuff on there you don't want strangers to be in. And so there's three products that we use. We use Hyper-V. And if you have Windows 10 Pro and you have a supporting processor, you already have a free version of this that comes with Microsoft. You just search for Hyper-V Manager, and then you can enable it by going to Add Remove Programs, going to Hyper-V Manager and checking the boxes and just having Windows install it. There's also VMware, and this is made by a private company. And then you have VirtualBox. And I believe one of those is free, and then one of those is a paid one. I don't remember which is which. So all three of them do the same thing. It virtualizes a computer that's running on your computer. So you take local resources like the amount of memory and hard drive and CPU power, and you lend it into the virtual thing, and it runs significantly less than the computer that's outside, because obviously you have to have it in order to grant the virtual terminal to use it. So I'll pick a virtual terminal and give it, you know, like 8 gigs of memory. Well, my main computer has 16. When I have the virtual open, it has 8, so at least I can do some stuff on there. And then I'll take one of the CPU cores and I'll dedicate it towards the virtual machine. I'll give it maybe 80 gigs of memory or 80 gigs of hard drive space for the virtual hard drive. So when you launch it, when you open it up, it loads like Windows does. And when you open up the C drive will be 80 gigs. And you know, it's just a segment of a virtual machine, but it's operating. All the software thinks it's operating. All the, you know, if somebody remotes into it, they think they're operating on a standalone computer. And so the advantage of having that is you have a place to play around with things you might be uncertain of. Like on one machine, I have to do some research, right? Well, you pose the biggest risk to your computer when you're on sites that you don't trust. So if you create a virtual machine, and when you have to go to those kind of sites, go in your virtual machine and do it. And that way, if it, you know, drops some spyware on there or changes your browser, or does something anything funky, it's happening in the virtual environment, because virtual environments are very easy to just replace, right? Because they're disposable. So after you enable Hyper-V or install VirtualBox or VMware, now you would load it just like you do an operating system. It needs something bootable. Now, in both cases, you're going to need an ISO image of your operating system. So in my case, you can just go to Google and type in Windows 10 ISO, and they will give you, let you download a Windows 10 ISO, and then you can just put it in the Hyper-V, and now you've got Windows 10 loaded inside of another Windows 10, and you can start playing around with it. And then after you can move these, you can save these virtual terminals, create copies of them. Their utility is pretty good if you're playing in some maybe rougher things. And this lends itself, the virtual terminal is great for doing this kind of stuff, because if somebody comes in my machine and drops some spyware, I don't want them to do it on the computer. I don't want to hose my computer down. I'd prefer they do it to a space like a virtual machine. So play with it this weekend. There's no harm in doing it. And so if your CPU supports it, you might have to go in the BIOS of your machine and allow virtualizations in the motherboard of your machine. But if it does support it, you can load Hyper-V and get playing today, and it's not going to cost you anything. Hyper-V is free. The ISO is free. And then you can play around with it and see what you can do with it. But thanks for the call. Appreciate it. 330-729-9977. Or you can text me at 333-1570. You're listening to the Youngstown Computer Show on 570 WKBN. I'll be back. All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show. I'm Joe Danier, owner of Youngstown Computer and your host for this program. Let me tell you a little bit about Youngstown Computer. If you feel that you'd like to support our company, we bring you this program. We'd really appreciate if when you're in need of something, either on the tech side or the service side or just hardware side, that you would give us a call and give us a shot at serving those needs. 330-259-7278 is the phone number. You can give a call. We are redeveloping our appointment scheduling program so that if you can kind of shop our services, see what we got, and be able to schedule yourself an appointment for our guys. And that way, I find myself, if I can do it over the internet, I like it better than having to make a phone call. Some of you like phone calls, and so that's an option. You can call 330-259-7278, or you could just go to youngstowncomputer.com, find a block of time that you'd like to rent us for. We'll come out to you and solve your problems and get you on your way. As I suggested, we're doing a lot of field support again. We're getting back into that where we're coming to you. I would much rather our people come to you than you come to us. For the sheer fact is, a lot of your problems stem from an environmental issue. And as soon as you remove your computer from your house or your business and bring it to us, you may have removed the problem. So you get it to us, and then we can't replicate it. And it almost feels like when you take your car into the mechanic that you can't get it to happen. You can't make the noise happen, right? And so we'd like to come there and see it in its environment, and that way we can kind of get some information that we can't once you have it to us. And because it is the most unsafe thing when you transport a machine, if certain things happen, if it slams around or it's not fitted properly, you could do damage to it in transport, and we don't want to see that happen. So I think our guys could do the unplug and plug it back in better. I think we can transport it better. I think we can see more information when we see it in its environment. So I just think it's a better overall service. And so if you give me preference, I'm going to say coming to you, not just because I want to shake your hand and say hi to you, but because I think we can provide a better product at the end of the day if we do that. So 330-259-7278. You can call us. Option one gets you the commercial services. Option two gets you to residential services. And option three gives you the studio. And then we have youngstowncomputer.com. There's a big red button that says book now. It'll bring you to sort of like a menu of services that we provide, both commercial, residential, and then you can kind of pick out your time and date and get yourself signed up for a service call. And, you know, you can use that too for things just like, you know, you're ready to do maintenance for the spring, and, you know, grab a time slot and we'll come out to you and get it all done. And again, we're only dedicating 1 or 2 days a week to the field stuff because we've just done a whole freaking year with you coming to us and by appointment only. And it was so out of our norms that I'm a little excited to get back to the point where we can start getting back to our normal model again. And so we'll need your help to kind of jump back into that. So again, 330-259-7278. Even if you don't need our stuff right now, write that number down on a sticky note, stick it to the side of your computer. And then when the needs arise, please give us a call. 330-259-7278. All right. Thank you. Appreciate it. So we're talking about, I did want to put a sort of like an asterisk next to doing the scam baiting. It's exciting when you hear me talk about it that I get to kind of, you know, clock a couple of these scammers across the mouth. Now, here's the thing. I am a student of the strategy. I am watching and learning and trying to get to know what they do and what's in it for them. So once I figure out the strategy, then I can better inform all of you. So I it is worth it to me to expose my time and my resources to a potential scammer that I may do something stupid and put my name or information at risk because I'm able to get smarter because of it. It's a fair trade. If any of you listening decide to do this, there's some risks that go along with it. You want to make very sure that when you allow one of these people into your computer that you do not give them information that could then make your plight worse. Right, it'll be funny to waste all their time at the expense that you go check your bank account and find somebody maneuvered something out of there. You know, our computers, it allows us to save a lot of our personal information and saved passwords. So if you invited a scammer onto your computer and they blacked out your screen and you couldn't see what they're doing and you couldn't get control of it again, you're pretty screwed, right? And so, so you do not want to do that unless you have a lot of confidence going into it. I don't want you to do it for the sake of being part of this and then put yourself at risk. Don't do it. I will continue to escalate and increase my strategies and hold these guys. I can't really do accountability. I can't get them in trouble. But that's what all I can do is waste their time so they're not talking to people who are vulnerable. That's the whole plan. All right, 330-729-9977. We'll come back for another segment here after this break. 330-729-9977. Or you can text me. I'll read those text messages when we come back as well. 333-1570 is the text message. You listen to the Youngstown Computer Show on 570 WKBM. I'll be back. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Youngstown Computer Show. Joe Danier here. Talk about things that are happening in tech. Give you the stage so that if you need something, need some advice, need to just spout something off at me, feel free, 330-729-9977, or you can text me at 333-1570. Let's go to Sean. Sean, you're on the Youngstown Computer Show. How can I help you?
Yes. I'm trying to install 1Password, the password keeper, onto my wife's phone. And it requires a monthly price. And I had installed it on my phone years ago, and it was a one-time buy. Is there an option for 1Password where you could buy it one time? Or if not, is there another password keeper that's free or low cost that I can install that's advisable?
The two that I see most often is LastPass, which I believe that it's like maybe $10 a year, and then Dashlane, which I'm uncertain of what it is. Is that in your what you would consider low cost, $10 a year or so?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, LastPass. Okay.
Yeah, LastPass is the one that I ended up with. We kind of like previewed all of them. And I think you're right. Like when I did it, they had some ones that you could just buy outright. And then eventually they all went to the subscription model. But I think I want to say it's like maybe $3 a month. So 36, maybe it's under $50 a year. I think one other option, Dashlane, was about $12 a year. But it's in that realm.
Okay. That sounds good. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
There are no free ones that are reliable or trustworthy.
Well, LastPass has a free version of it, but it limits you, I believe, to like 10 different things it's managed. It's just it gives you a start so that if you like it, then you can upgrade to the one that does more than that.
Okay. I'll try that out. Right. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks, Sean. I appreciate you being out there. And so what we were talking about there is that a safer method of managing your password, I'm saying safer is what's in comparison to what you're doing right now.
So you're taking your risk level and looking at what you're doing now. So most of us, we create a password that's pretty sophisticated, but then we use the same password across pretty much every site. So the risk level is that, yes, you created one that's sophisticated, but it happens to be the same one that you use on every site. So that's not secure. If somebody does happen to get your password, they pretty much got the keys to the castle. They can go to any site and log in as you to any of the, you know, popular sites that you would go to, social media and banking and services and stuff like that. So what you want to do is if you use a password management, you can get a little bit more sophisticated with how you do your passwords, because you're not really remembering them. You're just remembering one password that you change all the time and is really hard to remember. And then the password management tool does all of your logging into things. And that means the downside is that you don't really know any of your own passwords, right? You're logging in to a page, but using a management tool to do that thinking for you. So is it 100% secure? No, no such thing. What you were doing before wasn't 100% secure. So in relation to what normal people are doing, a password management tool is better than writing on sticky notes and putting it in your dresser drawers, if you can see the value or the risk in the, what that would what that would do. So that's what it is. You can improve your risk level by having it managed. Now, down from having it managed, you can make up your own passwords and just have the password management tool remember all of them. And it's more of a convenience tool than it is that making it more sophisticated. So you could still have all your passwords be exactly what they are right now, but you don't ever have to input them because the password management tool is doing it for you. And then you log it into your home computer, you log into your phones and tablets and your work computer. And then when you log in with it, it doesn't care where you're at. It just logs in as you no matter where you are. And so it is a really convenient tool. And like I said, the two that I see most often are LastPass. And I did go to their site. It looks like they have a free option. And the free option stays free, but you get 30 days of the premium, which is the $3 a month version that has extra. So if all you're going to have it do is manage three or four websites, just do the free one and you don't have to do anything. But if you go to the premium one, it does a lot more. I think it's unlimited as many as you can do, and it's $3 a month. And if you want to do your whole family, it's $4 a month. And I didn't mean to make this a pitch for LastPass, but I just want to give you something to compare it to, that it's not quite as cheap as it once was. It's not the $12 a year that it once was. I'm going to go to Dashlane, too, and see how much that sucker is. Dashlane. Personal pricing. And this one looks like $4 a month for essentials, $7. So Dashlane's a little bit more expensive, but it's just still in that same deal. If you're paying by month, $5 or $6 is not bad for that kind of convenience and protection. So thank you for that call. I appreciate it. And I don't want to dedicate the whole show to the scam baiting thing, but I will tell you this, that you would not believe how many legitimate websites are actually scamming websites. I always knew that there were some like shady type of resellers out there, because sometimes we'll have to buy a part that only one person has and we end up buying from somebody who, were the whole time I'm thinking it fell off the back of a truck and they're just selling it, or they stole it and they're just hawking stolen merchandise. You always get that feeling sometimes. But when I'm looking at calling these scam baiters, it's actually a little hard to come up with the numbers and get in the right, get in that moment so that you could call them. You know, I'm a little insulated from it because I'm actually practicing things that don't put me in those positions. And now I'm trying to be in those positions. It's a lot harder than you think. But one of the strategies I am about uncovering unscrupulous is I'm using a community, like a message, not a message board, but a community of, you know what I mean? So anyway, a community of people who do this as well. And when they share some information, I'm using some of their shared information where I'm not calling them directly. I'm researching companies that are connected with the scam one. So like, let's just say I come up with one that's like yourtechservice.com, right? And then I'll look at ones that are linked with yourtechservice.com, and I'll see like 50 websites that are also connected with that scam. And one of them is like canonprintersupporthelp.com. And I went there and it looks like a really brick and mortar small business of a company that supports Canon printers. And I'm like, okay, well, that one looks like one that I might even shop if I was buying a maintenance kit for a printer.
But it came from the same ownership or the same administration as the one that I know is a scam. What are the chances that this legitimate one is truly legitimate, or it's just another front for another scam? And I start making all these considerations. How many other legitimate companies that am I dealing with that are, you know, scamming or at least funneled to scammers? And it's really eye-opening to how much effort and resources are put in to running an illegitimate business, but doing all of the same things and expenses that you could just do the legitimate business and probably make more money. I don't know how much they make from scamming, but it's got to be an easier thing to actually fix a Canon printer from, because there's got to be a lot more people out there that have Canon printers that need fixed versus tricking people into what? I mean, I don't even know what you would do if somebody called you. How do you scam a Canon printer? How do you convince them that you got to pay a monthly fee or a repair? I don't even know what you'd do. But anyway, that's it's eye-opening, and it just underscores that when I tell you guys that when you receive an incoming call, I want you to be very cynical, and I want you to pretend that everybody who you don't know is trying to take an angle on you. Be super defensive. Don't believe people, because they lie for a living. Like, not, and it's hard, especially with older people who grew up in neighborhoods where you leave your door unlocked and you trusted all your neighbors with your spare key. It's tough to say, hey, you know what? Nobody's really playing by those rules outside of this neighborhood. And you're connected with a lot of those neighborhoods that are outside of yours that have no moral compass. They don't care about you. They would take from you. They don't care if you can't make your car payment because they took the money from you. They do not care. They're not built that way. So it's tough to be able to say, hey, I'm going to be cynical with the guy that emails me or the guy that calls me, and I'm going to expect them to be a scammer before I expect them to be a legitimate call. And I went through my, you know how in Outlook you have the junk folder? And I assumed that in my junk folder there was going to be a bunch of scams. So I went through for like 30 days worth of scams, and I was going to try to dig up some phone numbers out of there. Would you believe it that, and we use Microsoft Exchange, we use Portal for our email hosting, and you would believe that I didn't have a single scam email in my junk folder. It was just solicitations. They were legitimate solicitations, but they were considered junk. So we've come a long way from 100, you know, buy a Rolex or, you know, buy the male enhancement drugs. We've come a long way from those days to I could not find a scam message in my junk mail. Last week I told you when I tried to make some of the calls, they had the scam number shut down so fast. Skype blocked it and Vonage blocked it and Google Voice hasn't blocked anything yet. I think that's pretty open. But yeah, I mean, they're shutting down these websites and phone numbers as fast as they're bringing them online. So there's a lot of defenses, a lot of expenses that are coming from the services that we pay that are fighting these scamming efforts. And I think they're doing a pretty good job. For as difficult, like I did two videos on scam baiting, and it took me like 20 calls before I got someone online. It was either blocked, disconnected, or whatever. So think about all of those obstacles whoever's doing the communication blocking or the website blocking are doing to get in the way of someone unsuspecting wandering in there. I mean, that's a lot of effort. And so I commend us for taking such a good approach on protecting consumers. But I feel like we can protect consumers on our end just by saying that these jerks are out there just waiting to pounce on you. And even if we have to, you know, squash a couple of cold callers that had legitimate products, then so be it. I mean, I'm not a big fan of those people anyway, so squashing their efforts so that you don't accidentally get one of those people, in your financial life who just – and here's the thing. I said earlier that if they took my idea for a new scam, it would probably get better, but these guys are so impatient, so eager – they start saying things that make your red flags go up. Like, legitimately, hey, you have a bill that's coming due, and you're gonna go to jail if you don't pay this bill. So you better go get a Target card to pay me. Really? So Google or a big company, the preferred method of payment is for you to go to Target and get a Target card to make your payment. That doesn't even sound right, right? So if we just dismiss the stupidness, but they're so eager for you to give them the money, right, that they go to what they know works, which is they can transfer gift cards like it's a financial commodity in of its own. So that's their go-to, but it defies deal. You're not talking to a legitimate company if you're going to make payment on a product with somebody else's gift cards. That's just ridiculous. So again, if you just pay attention to it, they out themselves just because they can't slow play any of their cons because they need their money now. And so, you know, be real suspicious and tell people that you care about that this stuff is going on and happening too, so that maybe we can you know, stop the scammers from having an impact, at least in our community, because we're all smarter than that. We can cover our own. So 330-729-9977. And there's a text message. Let me go ahead and read that sucker real quick. And if you do want to get a hold of the program that way, I will read those from time to time and pitch them in the show and talk about them just like they were on the phone. Let me get through here. Sorry, my phone was I didn't charge it last night. And so I spend the rest of the day like keeping it plugged into things. And that's annoying because I feel like I'm tethered to everything. Hey, if you're looking for a topic for one of your shows or a class, the Raspberry Pi 4 is an awesome, inexpensive machine. I bought three of them recently and gave one to my granddaughter that she built with me and is a great learning platform. And the 8-gig version literally is almost desktop replacement with the Twister OS. So what we're talking about here is that Raspberry Pi is sort of like a really, really, really small form factor computer. I'm talking like the whole thing can host an operating system and be a computer. So like a lot of us, when we have like a single operation device that just needs to host an operating system, you hate to throw a full computer at it because that's wasted horsepower. If you can get away with having one of these microcomputers to throw at it, it's great. So texter is throwing that out as an option to play around with it. We would pretty much run Linux on most of these Raspberry Pis, these single operation Raspberry Pis. But as they suggested, they've gotten pretty good. I do want to mention too, we just bought something called a B-Link, and it's also a small form factor computer. And we have this thing running a full blown Windows 10 operating system on it, and it was like $300 for the operating system and the whole setup, including the hard drive that was inside. So I was blown away that how can you put together a $300 machine with operating system in that deal. It worked out pretty well. So if you're maneuvering like I am, where most of your stuff has gone to the cloud, you don't have, you know, you're not talking about a development program, you know, Photoshop or Premiere or anything like that. You're not developing graphics on it or anything. You just need a low-end machine. I mean, some of these things like Raspberry Pis or the B-Links are perfect. 330-729-9977. Let's go to David. David, you're on the Youngstown Computer Show. How can I help you?
Hello, yep. Get you off speakerphone. Thank you kindly.
Sure.
I need to buy a web camera. A webcam, like a separate thing from the little camera that's on my laptop that I could plug in, you know, to a USB, yeah, whatever. And I didn't know if you had something that you'd like to say about the field of view. I do want to stand in front of a whiteboard and, like, write things that the person receiving the image would be able to see on their, like, laptop. Because the field of view on some of these, as I've been starting to shop for it, 65 degrees, 78 degrees, 90 degrees field of view on the webcams. I didn't know if you had some experience with webcam features.
Yeah. Can you hang on the line? We're going to go to a break, but I want to give a little bit more time than just a quick rundown. Can you wait?
Absolutely.
Sweet. I'm going to put you back on hold. We're going to talk about, this is a cool topic. And what we're considering here is a lot of the webcams are, the field of view is meant for a person sitting like a couple feet from a computer. And so you have some of these webcams covering larger areas, the optics and the lighting, and it's just not built for it. So I'm going to throw some options at our caller that's on the line. We'll talk a little bit about video. But if you want to get on the line, 330-729-9977. You can also text me and ask your questions that way, and I'll read through some of those texts on the other side of this break. That number is 330-333-1570. Program that number in your phone, because texting is almost like the preferred way for me to antagonize some of the hosts during the week. 330-333-1570. And we'll come back with answering David's question when we get back from this break. You're listening to the Youngstown Computer Show here on 570 WKBN. I'll be right back. All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show. I am Joe Danier, your host, and we're talking about tech and computers. Before the break, we had a phone call to come in with David. We're going to talk a little bit about video and some broadcast and streaming. So, David, you still with me?
I sure am.
Okay, excellent. Okay, so what you're finding here, and we'll bring everybody up to speed, is that some of the traditional webcams don't give you the depth or the field of vision to give you good coverage. I mean, they're really engineered to get somebody's face and settings a couple feet away from the camera.
Right.
And I've tripoded a couple of these and tried to get field of depth, and it just doesn't work out well. You either don't get good lighting, or you get pixelation, or you just don't get focus. It's just not built for it. So we've used cameras from, you know, the $100 range all the way up to the $2,000 range for this purpose. And I'm going to kind of give you the kind of crash course in what to look for. If you can find a camera that has a USB connection that is built a little bit more for depth, you got some zoom in there, you can do a little bit more controls with the optics, then you don't have to go the route where you're putting in a capture card. Okay, so a lot of your higher end USB cameras is where you would go. You're going to get into the between $100 and $200 range for a USB camera. Now, if you don't want to do the USB camera, you want to feed it into more of like a production type of an environment, then you can still start in the low end of 200, but what you're going to get is an output of either SDI or HDMI. It's going to be more like your traditional, you know, photograph camera or video camera. You have an output where you see the image, but then you have to get it into the computer somehow. Now, were you doing live stuff or are you doing recordings?
No, I wanted to do live.
Okay. So, you're going to want to then use the computer to send the produced video out, and you need to have some camera that's capturing the video, either through USB so that you can use the webcam or through HDMI, and then you run a capture card. We use Blackmagic capture cards, and they make the varieties that have HDMI and SDI. So then if you get like a regular SLR camera, some digital camera, the video output goes out into an HDMI, and then the computer has the capture. So is any part of that do you need me to explain or slow down on?
Well, what I wanted to do, I do these live instruction workshops, but, you know, because of COVID and everything, my competitors were going virtual, but it was terrible. The students didn't like it. The results were terrible. And I knew that was going to happen. I kind of sensed that was going to happen, so I just backed off, and I did some things outside instead, outdoors.
Okay.
You know, with my fingers and legs crossed for good weather, and I lucked out, and I did some things like at hotel conference rooms where it was a huge room where I could space people out more. But you know, I have to get back to normal situations, which is like a normal classroom kind of situation at a high school or something like that. But there's always these students who want me to do some extra supplemental stuff with them. It's really hard to meet with them personally. And I tried using the webcam on my laptop, and it's just not – and they use their webcam on their laptop, but it just wasn't good at all. Now, I don't expect them – to invest in some sort of camera. I'll do that. But I want them to be able to sit in front of their laptop, probably not their phone, because I can't imagine them being able to see what I write.
Right.
And I want them to be able to see what I write just with a standard Expo dry erase marker at a whiteboard, and I'll use a tripod is what I intend to do. But I didn't know what to do about this field of view. Plus, there was another parameter or specification I wanted to talk to you about called frame rate. I'm looking at Logitech's, like a website that's discussing various Logitech webcams.
Hey, David, I hate to do this again. I'm going to put you back on hold while we go to this break, and I'll let you finish that, and we'll be right back.
I got all kinds of time.
Okay, excellent. All right, we're talking with David about some streaming technology that goes into it. I'm super interested. I love this part of the segment of the marketplace, and we're talking a little bit about it. You're listening to the Youngstown Computer Show on 570 WKBN. I'll be back. All right. Welcome, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show. Before that break, we interrupted a couple times. David was talking about streaming some events, and a lot of you are in the same boat where we're doing things that are separated from the people we need to be with, to have conversations. We got around, you know, we got used to doing Zoom, but a lot of you are doing more group setting things that aren't as productive, you know, for that kind of an environment. So we started talking with David. David, you're still here, right?
Yep.
Okay. So where we're at now, you kind of set the stage of what you're looking to do. You've gone through some of the more traditional stuff that's off the shelf. You know that you're probably going to require more. Did you have any specific questions? I know you said about frame rate. So I guess I can answer that right off the get-go. So frame rate, the cameras are going to have the ability to be able to have output at a certain frame rate. And if you're, you know, the standard broadcast is 30 frames per second.
That was something I needed to know, what the standard thing was, because it has on here frame rate 30 FPS for 2160p, 30 or 60 FPS for 1080p, 30, 60, or 90 FPS for 720p.
Yeah, you're basically, when you start streaming, whatever you're streaming through, you're going to set what your frame rate's going to be, and you just have to match it up so that your camera can do at least what your stream is.
So how do you find information on the stream rate? So the frame rate is a setting on the camera.
So all the cameras that you've mentioned, they're all capable at least to that level. So I don't really see, where are you going to be broadcasting to? Is it through social media?
I was going to use Zoom.
Zoom. Okay, yeah. You're going to be fine with anything you pick, because 720 is going to be the minimum there anyway. So really, there's not going to be anything less than that, so you're going to be fine there. One thing I was looking up during that...
But this camera, pardon me for interrupting, Joe. This camera that I'm looking at, apparently it has the ability, like say it's, you could set it at 2160p, 720p, 1080p. You could set it at what p... Is that pixels per square inch or something?
The resolution, yep.
Okay, there's that. You have a resolution setting, but you could also change the frame rate. Like it has three different frame rates at 720p, 30, 60, and 90. It has two different frame rates at 1080p, 30 or 60. It has only one frame rate at 2160p.
Right, and so that you can put it in a different mode depending on what you are sending out, and so no matter what you put in there, it's going to be good enough for what goes out through Zoom. Zoom's not going to challenge it, so that you have enough.
Okay.
The worst thing that's going to happen is your camera is going to be at a resolution higher than Zoom can pick up, so it's going to compress it down to a form that it can use.
So how would I know? Like, should I just avoid 2160 and 1080 completely and just use 720?
When I'm out through Facebook, I know that their resolution settings are 720, so I'll just basically put the camera in 720 mode, so I'm not sending too much information to the computer when all it's doing is stepping it down. So I just make them all kind of uniform depending on how it's going out.
Do you know what Zoom uses? Like, you knew right away what Facebook uses. Do you know what Zoom uses, or can I find that out?
I'm going to look that up right now, and I think it's 1080. Default resolution. Let's see how right I am. No, it's only 640s. So
it's only 640.
I think that's the default setting is 640. Yeah. So you're.
Definitely put it at 720. Then I wouldn't want to go higher than that.
Right. So you're good. If 720 is all that you're going to be doing, then that's
all right.
Good enough.
Well, I have a 720 television. I'm happy with it. So
okay.
What all about right. The field of view, Joe? It says, this particular camera, I can select what field of view I want to use. If I want to do what I described before, when we talked a couple times before the breaks and that, I want to be able to stand in front of a whiteboard and for my body to be like maybe waist and up, and I want to be able to write on the whiteboard. I'm not worried about like lighting and stuff, because I'll figure that out. I'm worried about the field of view, because I want them to be able to see the board and me, and that's pretty much all. And I don't know the 65, 78, or 90. I don't know what might be recommended for that, or would you know anything about that?
Well, it depends on the environment. I've never had to use or even acknowledge that, because it's every place that I'm setting up is different. So I have to have a camera that has a zoom that can overcome me having to set my tripod up like further back in the room, or if I can get closer, then I'm gonna be a little bit better off because my lighting can be adjusted. So you're gonna have to work around that. I don't think you're gonna have to pick a number that's gonna best situate you or suit your environment. I think you have to play with it a little bit until you can get a camera that complements wherever you're setting up with the lighting and with the what's going on. I don't think you can go wrong because you're just at a whiteboard. You're not creating a whole lot of movement. You have a little bit of control over the lighting. So if you go with, let's just say, a regular digital camera, and then it has the ability to output some video, that might be your best bet there because you're going to have the zoom. You're going to be able to get through and if you're set a little bit further back. But that's probably your best bet there. You're going to be above where the webcams are and right at the digital camera or the video camera edge.
So what would be – what, you know how you figured out the 720 is probably – just use that since, Facebook, yes. Zoom, What about the field of view, 65, 78, 90? Do you have any thoughts about which one of those three would be good?
I don't know. I've never had them into consideration when I've said,
exactly.
So it might be a specification, but it's never been relevant in anything I've been setting up.
That you were knowing.
Yeah.
I got you. Right.
So it might be an angle. Right. It might be like the degree angle that that it'll pull in, a wide angle versus a thing. But I've never had that consideration.
Okay.
All right. After you get this set up, make sure that you check back in with me and let me know what you came up with and how everything worked out.
And that other part, I live in Struthers, so the part that you just acquired of to enlarge your space from the landlord or whatever. What are you doing in there exactly?
Well, I'm gonna get off this call real quick, and I'm gonna explain all of Makerspace. So, thank you for the call.
Okay.
I appreciate you coming in.
Thank you, Joe.
Absolutely. So, let me describe what we're doing over in Struthers. One of the previous callers asked that same thing if we're going to be teaching or doing instruction. So, throughout history, Youngstown Computer has done workshops, right? So, we've taken things that come up that are important to our customers and people that take these classes, and we've built syllabus around it so that we can teach sort of like crash courses in some of these things. So, if somebody wanted to do eBay, we'd throw together an eBay class and give you the basics to get you on eBay so that you kind of have a head start in it. So, think of that logic. And we did that for quite a number of years. In fact, I did it all the way up until my son was born. And then, obviously, I wanted to spend time in the evenings with him rather than teaching classes. So it kind of went by the wayside. But it's always been part of our DNA, and what we do is part of the education side of Youngstown Computer. So I rented the suite next to Youngstown Computer in Struthers. We're going to set up a makerspace. So if you consider, like, in my house, I had all of these machines that can do stuff, and most of the time they sat idle. So I had a 3D printer, and I'd print things every once in a while. For the most part, it would not be printing things more than it would be printing things. I had laser engravers. I had vinyl plotters. I had kilns. I had all this stuff, and, it was there. I could use it when I wanted to, but it was kind of a waste that I wasn't using as often as I wanted to. I thought it would be a really cool idea to set up a space, to set up this equipment, teach people how to use it, and then kind of let them loose to use this stuff on their own and make stuff, make t-shirts and make little figurines and make jewelry, make something with software, make something with 3D printers. And so that's the premise of the makerspace. The back area is going to be instruction and classes. So when our texter says, hey, it would be neat to do a Raspberry Pi workshop. Many of you don't even know what a Raspberry Pi is or have never touched one. So if I put together a workshop, it's going to be up to you as a person of the audience to want to fetch that kind of information. And now I can show you what a Raspberry Pi is and how to do it. I'd like to sculpt how eager we are at going and buying the information that's important to us versus, I've been in the habit of when I need to know something, I just go out to YouTube and I go learn it on my own terms. But I'm a connoisseur that way. I love just taking in a sponge for new stuff, and I make it part of my regimen that I'll go buy information whenever I can because I just, I don't know what I don't need. I don't know what I need to know at any given time. So I like exposure to stuff that I haven't even thought of yet. So when I wonder if it were reversed and I just heard about some dude talking about a Raspberry Pi, I would totally take a workshop to get exposure to something I don't even know what I want to do with it. So I'm hoping that as we bring some of these more you know, concepts that are either abstract or a little bit out there, that you guys will take it just as a curiosity more than anything else and see if you like some of that stuff. You don't know what you're even going to do with a 3D printer, but I'll put you in front of one and have you print out a whistle or an award that you could put on the wall and see if you like that kind of stuff. And some of you will, and some of you will, it will spark even, you know, more stuff. So, so a Raspberry Pi, I'd totally throw a Raspberry Pi class out there. 3D printers, it's assured that we're going to do that. Streaming and video, absolutely. So we're going to be operating. Last week we went and set up all of the shelving, because I said there's two parts of this place. The back space is going to be due where the makerspace, where we're teaching the equipment and allowing you to use the equipment. The front of it is going to be a retail space where they're going to be we're going to be collecting stuff that gets made in the backspace and then selling it in the front. So if you want to make a t-shirt, you could turn around and put it on the shelf and sell it in the front space and set up a little side hustle where you don't really have to do anything except for you pay to use and pay for supplies, and then you can sell it to, you know, support the next round of creation. So it's kind of interesting. I'm also going to stock the front part with stuff that maybe isn't made in the makerspace, but here in the valley. So if you get used to buying some of the stuff that is produced here, we're just going to consolidate it, bring it all under that roof, and then you can shop from products that are made right here in the valley. So I'm going to invite all of you, the listeners, to come down here and support that store, because the more we sell from local vendors here, the more we can do through consignment and pull even more stuff in. And it's like a one-stop shop where I'm not interested in bringing in, you know, there's a lot of retail shops that cover necessities and whatever. I want to focus in on stuff that's made here, give an outlet to sell stuff that's made here, either in my shop or somewhere in our community in that store. So it depend on you both to come in and make stuff with me and also shop and support the people who are set up in the shop. So thank you for that question. I did want to talk about that anyway, and you guys set me up perfect right on the tee for that. And so, you know, and a lot of the in the past, somebody has brought up some topics and we floated it out there and there was like one or two of us. So I'll probably run a class, two or three, four. I'd like to get the full thing. So eight people is my goal. So have some of the classes that I know are super specialized. You know, I don't know if I can convince anybody to show up to teach a class or put a syllabus together with not a lot of interest in it, but I'd like to. I'd like to be able to do them no matter what. One of the coolest things when we used to do this every Wednesday night is that we had a same group of people that would show up for every class, and then because they were regular in the class, they liked learning that way, they would suggest what we learned next week, and I would hurry up and put it together. So I didn't even know what I was teaching the next week until my group of people showed up and said, this is what we want to learn. I want you guys to depend on the function of our enterprises to learn about stuff. I don't want to be normal and regular. I want you to learn about stuff that you're that get you going, a little bit passionate about. We got universities and technical schools that do the regular stuff, and they do a fantastic job. I want to teach you something to see if a light bulb goes off. You know, teach it in a way that says, you know, I'm considering that I have interest in this, and if I knew how to code a video game, I'll know by the end of it whether or not this is for me or not, and I'm willing to, like, stake it and put it and show up and try to do that. And our job is to keep them, you know, fun and have a practical exit, right? If you learn how to do something and then you can run a machine and make something, you're in business. You have a new you have a new skill, a new talent that were developed through our enterprises. So apologize for going a little too long on that, but I just want you to know that is coming. The wall slats got put up last week. We got one more set. We got all of the hardware to put our shelving. If you make something here in the valley and you're interested in putting it on one of my shelves, right? I have 100 vendors. We've staked it out, and there's going to be 100 individual things of shelf space, and we're going to give everybody a month. There's no fee for putting it on the shelf. You can go longer if your stuff sells. If it doesn't sell real well, then you get your stuff back, and then somebody else takes that spot. It's not like an offloading of everything that you carry. It's not an extension of your shop. I want you to go through your inventory and say, this is what represents something that's being built here, or produced here, or assembled here. This is a good example of that, something Joe would be proud of, somebody come in and say, this is a jewel of our area. So we want to sell a bunch of stuff for you. But if you're interested, call our office, 330-259-7278, and leave word that you're interested. The way that it works, it's twofold. I want to do consignment. You give me the stuff, I'll put it on the shelf. When it sells, that we'll split it. And I believe we're in like the 25% range. So we're going to take a 25% consignment fee out of whatever it sells for. You guys set the pricing. Sometimes we'll just buy the stuff from you and we'll put it on there and we'll just buy it wholesale and then we'll mark it up depending on what it is. So if you're a business that can't do consignment, that inventory is really important to you, then we're willing to make special things. We're here for businesses. We're here for companies. We're here to take care of you guys. And if you can do it, don't make us, you know, carry the inventory. That's awesome. You're helping us out. But if you need it, and we want you in our shop regardless. So if it means that we got to extend it and buy your inventory and do it that way, we're totally willing. So my model can exist with both of them if we're sensitive to the needs of both seller and buyer. We want the best for you guys. We want to sell a bunch of product for you. And we want the community to be proud. And then I want people to walk into that store and say, wow, I had no idea this was sold, this was produced, this was assembled here in Youngstown, Ohio. That's my goal. So, all right, thanks everybody. 330-729-9977. You can text me at 333-1570. You're listening to the Youngstown Computer Show on 570 WKBN. I'll be back. All right, welcome back, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show. I am Joe Daniel, owner of Youngstown Computer, and this is your Saturday show. Did want to ask that this question came in, when should you give an email address to your kids? And so I know that it's probably maybe not useful when they're super little, but if you want to, you know, as kids start getting their iPads and Android devices and they start needing to be connecting, they're going to need exposure. Like, you know, most of the classrooms have signups with either Google Classroom, and so that you have to have some email, phone number, something like that. So you might want to get prepared on what you will use, because you don't want to pay for email service specifically for a kid's iPad that you're never going to actually send an outgoing email on. But there are email providers that are I suggest that they're going to be here when the kid gets older. So like Gmail is a really good option. It's just going and creating an email address for your kid. And that way, if you need it, you can. One thing I do recommend is grab the domain name for your kid. And we did this with Ryan, and we heard a bunch of people that do this. You really never know in the future whether or not your kid's going to become famous or need to be able to take the real estate that is their name and need it. So go out to, you know, GoDaddy.com or one of your domain register products and just pick it up. It's only a couple bucks a year to keep it registered. Do their name.com. And that way, if they ever have some kind of public anything and they need to have the domain for some reason, that you already, that you already got it. That's one thing I would recommend, because honestly, if your kid starts to become, you know, do some public things and then someone takes over and registers their name for them, then you won't own it and they will, kind of a thing. So that's might be something that you do. As far as phone numbers go, we've used, when you do a Gmail account, you also have access to do a Google Voice account. Now, this is one I can't predict whether or not it will be around forever, but because it's bound, you know, it's a one-stop deal where you do the Gmail account and then just open up the Google Voice, it kind of makes sense to do it all through Google. You might in the future have to do something different, but I don't know what age that you're interested in giving your kid their own cell phone number, but I'm not there yet. I'm not interested in giving him a direct cell phone connection. He can text message and do Google Voice, so technically he could do it. It's not easy, and it doesn't, you know, it's one of those things where I'm being very slow to wade into those kind of communications. And he is getting that age. It probably would be a good idea. There's a benefit to it, but that's a good question. Next text message is, Adobe Flash Player wants me to uninstall because it's not supported anymore. Is that a scam? It is not a scam. And there's a component for Adobe that kind of looks for updates. And a lot of the versions that are sitting on your computer might trigger that message to come up. If you don't trust the actual message, you can actually go through Add Remove Programs through Control Panel and remove it manually, because sometimes a scammer will emulate that same message that you're looking at. So Suspicious Joe will go into Control Panel, find Adobe, and just manually uninstall it, just in case the message is not legitimate. But it's probably true that it's not a supported version of Adobe and that it probably should be removed. Older software does that, where if it's an older version, it could represent some security vulnerabilities, so that you don't want to use it if they say that it's not, it shouldn't be on the operating system. And that does remind me that there are a couple of things that we regularly, nag at you guys to do that not everybody does, but I'll nag at you anyway. So number one, you want to keep your apps on your phone always updated. Some of you have it so that if your Android device, it automatically updates. You really don't have much to worry about. But maybe once a month, just go into your apps on the phone and on your iPhone or your Android and run an update. Update all apps. On the iPhone, it's under the App Store. And then if you go under your profile icon, it'll show you all the apps that are connected to your account. And it'll basically give you how many of them need updated. And you could just tap on update all. Do that regularly, because both the iPhone apps need updated, your computer apps or your computer and operating system need updated regularly. You want to keep those always as updated as you possibly can, because they make things, sometimes they'll make it a little faster, but most of the time they'll make it more secure. And if you're out of sequence or out of cycle with having those updated, it could just mean something could infect your computer or mess with your computer that otherwise wouldn't. So I would recommend from a regular basis that you do that. Password changes. I hate to even say this because I'm so bad at this myself. But every once in a while, every quarter, you should probably consider changing your password. And I don't mean changing it like completely just a brand new thing, because it's hard to remember them anyway. But make a change to your actual password that is maybe just one letter or one number or an extra symbol to make it different, so that if somebody's database got compromised, they don't have your today password in that. Just by changing one letter, then they don't have that. They're not going to try super hard to figure it out. They're just either going to have it or they don't. And if you wait too long, then those databases get leaked often enough that it probably somebody has a copy of it. So change your passwords today. All right, Dave, I see you out there. We'll come back as soon as we come back from this break. You're listening to the Youngstown Computer Show on 570 WKBN. We'll be back. All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show, 330-729-9977. We're going to go right to Dave. Dave's been waiting. Dave, you're on the Youngstown Computer Show. Thank you for waiting. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Hey Joe. I was just going to mention, I heard you talking about the field of view, and you were kind of questioning it, I guess.
Yeah.
And what I can say is it's equivalent to, if you have a regular video camera, for example, you've got an optical zoom. Well, in the case of these smaller cameras, they use a digital zoom. And that field of view, that's basically what that means, typically. So as you change from one setting to another, you're actually using a different little portion of the actual video target, if you know what I mean.
Is it a metric of like...
In other words, it's equivalent to a digital zoom. So
okay.
The tighter in you your image is, if you're like digitally zooming, you automatically lose resolution. So maximum resolution would be, full wide angle.
Okay. And is there significance to the number? Is it a metric of angle, or is it just if it's kind of arbitrary?
No. It's usually just in effect, it's just kind of zooming in on towards the center of the imagery. And, when you do that, of course, you're going to lose resolution. But, usually these cameras are decent enough that they still carry a nice-looking image. But, that's basically what's happening. Again, as opposed to an optical, for example, an optical zoom, you would basically not lose any resolution because, the optics are doing everything
right.
To...
Okay, Dave, thank you so much.
I mean, that's basically what it amounts to. It just it's a digital zoom. That's the word for it.
Okay, perfect. Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it. Appreciate
okay,
you being
Joe.
Out
okay,
there.
Okay, Joe.
All right. And that's what I love most about this show is that we have expertise everywhere that listen to the show in every department. So when you ask a question, it's not just me. You get all of the expertise that are spread out on this deal. And I appreciate Dave for calling and sharing his knowledge. And for, and I like to expound sometimes on something that's said for any of our listeners or viewers that don't have a lot of exposure to this kind of stuff. Digital view zoom versus an optical zoom. Think of it like this: is that if you have an optic, an optic on a camera, it has total vision of what it sees, but it also can move around within that image and present to you portions of that image through zooming. And it's not really zooming by magnification. Well, I guess it is internal magnification, but it's not like setting up a mirror and a lens and zooming in through a physical mechanical device. It's zooming in digitally on a segment of an image that's already in there. It would almost be like if you had a super high resolution image, but you're only showing like 10% of it, and zooming in on that 10%, it would look like you're honed in on that 10% because you got a super big one. So that the computer has to process, or the device has to process the big image so that you can zoom on the little ones. But thank you for that expertise on field of vision. You end up using a lot of optical lenses. I just have a preference that you just get, you know, we could use a couple of DSLR cameras or some of the video cameras that do it all digitally. And it's okay in most settings. I just over the course of years, I just have a preference of allowing the thing to have an optic to be able to do your focus on. My favorite by far is there's a company that does PTZ optics. The cameras are every bit of $1,500 to $1,700 a piece, but they are so hands off. Whereas a lot of the stuff happens without manually having to do much. It has the ability to optical zoom. It has a digital focus. I mean, it's really a good camera. But not everybody has, the budget to support a $1,700 camera. So a lot of times what we'll have to do is get cameras that are less expensive, but then do some contortioning to be able to get them to do what we want, low light conditions or objects in focus. And you can pull it off, but it takes some trial. I've seen most videographers in sort of like when there's a lot of variables are going into not knowing, that don't have the $20,000 cameras, they'll do a really good picture camera, DSLR camera, and then they'll put it in the video capture mode and then output it, especially if they're just capturing the footage, they can put it on an SD card. But a lot of those will give you an HDMI out, so then you can run HDMI from a really good quality optic DSLR camera into a computer to do the capture. And that way you probably, or most people already have one of those cameras lying around, but they're using it for still photography. And this is just using that same kind of hardware for a second kind of, multi-function. So thank you for that call, and thank you for that question. I'm checking text messages now, 330-729-9977. Just to kind of reiterate from before, the Makerspace is Joe's brainchild. I had it in this order that I had Youngstown Computer, which is a computer services company. I had Youngstown Studio, which is media productions. And then I have Makerspace, Makerspace is the physical production and teaching of sort of technical skills and having the output of being able to sell and, put those right out on the shelf. And then the next one is an entertainment company. So in that order, I mean, that is the chronology of Joe's life. You will see me hit those four companies. There might be some stuff in there where, we're going to probably do some real estate and house flipping, because it's sort of part of the taking something and, making it new and pouring value. And I love my community. I love our neighborhoods and I love the people. So I'm always going to invest in stuff that helps out and makes the places that I live better and more valuable as we go on. But those aren't necessarily encapsulated in some kind of enterprise. It's just something that I'm using to support the communities and to, kind of help grow things up all around me. I'm going to do my best to be able to keep those. So again, I brag about this area for the sheer fact that no matter what I do, this area is always a loyal supporter and you guys always show up. And I could not be more appreciative for that. I can't express myself to the point where you guys always come through for me, and I'm really thankful that you do. So thank you. I appreciate it. 330-729-9977. Let's go to Joseph next. Joseph, you're on the Youngstown Computer Show. How can I help you?
Hi. I'm just wondering if I can share some ideas for that guy that wanted to do the video conferencing.
Yeah, certainly. Go ahead.
I was wondering if he had ever seen a presentation from the Khan Academy. Have you seen those tutorials that the Khan Academy does on YouTube?
No, no.
Yeah, if you look up Khan, it's K-H-A-N Academy, and they have tons of tutorials that they do, everything from math and science and everything. And what they do is use screen captures of someone drawing on a electronic, board. So they use like a bamboo, a pad. So they draw there electronically, and what they draw shows up on their screen, and that's what they share with the users.
That's an interesting way of doing it. That is cool. So it's like a digital whiteboard. So then rather having a video feed, you're seeing the input as it's happening. That's neat.
Yeah. And this other video I saw from a guy called Scott Hanselman, he came up with this method of doing a clear whiteboard where he uses OBS and using, the green screen technology. You can put that same electronic whiteboard, but you can put it in front of you and make it look like it's a clear screen. So you can actually draw on it as if it's like in front of you.
How cool is that?
Yeah, so the students can see the teacher, and then he can actually be drawing on the screen right in front of him, so he can point out stuff right on the screen in front of him.
Hey, now, do you have one of these boards? Do you know how much they run?
Oh, I don't happen to have one, but I've seen them run for like $150, $200, and even more, depending on how big you want to have these little boards. Yeah.
That's really cool. Now, I've not heard of that, and it looks like their lineup of stuff that they teach is pretty significant, so I'm going to have to take a look at that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And another suggestion I saw was it was a teacher over in Australia who had to do remote teaching to his students, and what he did was he used that OBS software, and he set up a multi-camera setup in his house. So he would set up scenes where, like, one scene would be, like, him, basically, his face and body so he can talk about something. And then another camera shot would be of his whiteboard. So then he would switch over to the whiteboard. Then he can draw stuff on the whiteboard and then switch back to him, all live using OBS.
Nice. Okay. All right. Well, Joseph, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, hope that helps.
All right, awesome. Thank you for being out there. I appreciate your contribution. And for those of you who don't know, OBS is basically like a free streaming. It does encoding. It does connection to multiple devices. And I think what he said there was important, that if you set up multiple scenes with multiple cameras, you don't necessarily have to have one that does everything. So if you have different fields of depth where they can get you and also the whiteboard, you can have two individual cameras, maybe two lesser cameras. You have the one on a tripod that's closer to you, and then one on the tripod that's closer, and then you can use like an Elgato switching device. And then when you're up at the board, you hit the little button, it switches over to a scene for the whiteboard, and then you hit the button again and it switches back to the other camera. That might save you from having to buy one camera that can do it both when you get maybe two little Logitechs and you accomplish it both. So, Joseph, brilliant. Thank you. Again, our audience is amazing out there. I really appreciate appreciate what you guys contribute. And that's kind of cool. While he was talking, I was looking at one of these whiteboards that have sort of like a digital interface that you can use that basically takes input and it makes it into like its own video feed. So you can see the input real time and put it on the screen like a little picture in picture. And I'm looking at prices, and where he hit right on the nail was, $130 is the starting, and then it goes all the way up to $3,000 for a big 55-inch version of it. But that's interesting. I'm halfway tempted to buy one and give some of our studio people the ability to, like, can you imagine doing like an art class and being able to see the brush points or how someone's sketching something out and how they make contact on it? I think that would be a really cool perspective than the over the shoulder view of what they're doing. I mean, that would be kind of neat. We're actually going to bring an artist, a person that does photography, art, and painting and drawing. And that might be some fodder to throw at them to see if they can practice it and see what it looks like from the viewer's edge. That'd be neat. Can you imagine looking at Bob Ross and his happy little tree, but watching it from like the canvas standpoint as the brush push? That would be so neat. So learning something new every day. So thank you, Joseph. I appreciate you calling in and sharing with us. And you gave us some good stuff to go on. A little bit about Youngstown Computer. Let me give you this pitch real quick. If you do need something, any services that we provide, some of the stuff we do break fix stuff. So if it's not running right or it's slow or just needs cleaned out or it's broken, sweet. And you can bring it to our office. You can schedule an appointment. We'll put it on our bench. We'll get it figured out. And you can schedule that through youngstowncomputer.com, or you can call 330-259-7278. Rich is the operator on that side. You can push everything through him. He'll get on the bench, fixed up. He'll coordinate, you know, all of that kind of stuff. If you're like me and you like to schedule on your own, you can head to youngstowncomputer.com, go to book now, pick your time slot, add some details of what we're working on for you, and you can put us to work for you. If you own a business, we also do sort of like contract work on not contract work, but we will work on behalf of you. We will be your external IT person, right? So when you need us, we come in. There's no commitment. We'd come in just when you need us and something's broken. We can also do maintenances where we breeze through there once a month and check all your computers and do all of your updates and kind of be that insurance policy against keeping up with standards and updates. And take a look at the machines and be proactive to make sure that we get the things before they happen to you rather than being able to keep track of them. So if you need anything, 330-259-7278, dealing with us and bringing us your business helps this kind of programming. And we always appreciate what you guys have done for us over the years. Very supportive of all of our endeavors and supporting all of our, the computer and tech stuff as well. I'm glad you trust us. And I hope that we've done all that we could to earn that trust. And if ever there's anything we could do more, you just let me know. And, you know, I'm an enterprising guy. I will do my best to bring products that make you better, stronger, faster. And let's see. There was two cameras. Dave just handed me one. And I think he said Miro. Oh, yeah, Miro. So I'm going to have to take a look at that. There's some more options that Dave was looking at. Dave is the best producer in the frickin' world. I love him. He really goes to bat. Yes, thank you, Dave. And so he always comes through on the research side of things. But there was also a Logitech Stream Cam that came out when COVID first hit, and I never got a chance to buy it and try it out because when COVID hit, everybody and their mother brought webcams. And so it was really hard to get webcams. And so I never got to try it. It's $150-some, but it was a camera that supposedly is built for the streaming setups that he was talking about before. So if anybody has some input on the Logitech Stream Cam, $160, let me know. Text me or email me and let me know if you like it or not. Again, I don't really need any of those cameras right now, so I'd hate to buy one and just use it to try it. But if any of you have some input on it, next week I'll watch a video and see, get some reviews on it, because that was one that, you know, I had my eye on. If it weren't for, I got all those stupid PTC cameras. I call them stupid because they're just expensive, but I love them, but I hate them too because they were expensive. Anyway, so Miro is the product that Dave handed off to me about the whiteboarding. So thank you, Dave. Appreciate that. But anyway, if you do need something from Youngstown Computer, aside from the troubleshooting or whatever, we can sell you a computer, set up a laptop for you, switch you over to a solid state hard drive, all that kind of stuff. So we just appreciate it. When you have the need, give us a call. 330-259-7278 is the phone number for Youngstown Computer. We're located 600 Youngstown Pullman Road over in Struthers. So make sure you bring us your business when it comes along. So we'll take a quick break, and we got one more short segment until we're out of here for the day. 330-729-9977. You're listening to the Youngstown Computer Show on 570 WKBN. We'll be back. All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show. I'm Joe Daniel. Let me teach you a little bit of a tip or a trick. And I might have mentioned this. If I did, excuse me, I'm mentioning it again. So I have hearing deficit. So it's tough for me sometimes to go into places and hear quite right, and I probably should wear hearing aids, but I don't because I've just never been comfortable enough for me to wear, or I just didn't like them. I didn't like how they made me feel, the suction and the pressure that they – I just didn't like them. But I wear AirPods, like, all the time, listen to some kind of podcast at any given time or answering and talking on the phone with them. And so I didn't know this, but I noticed that they had this little icon on the iPhone of an ear when you're wearing your AirPods. And so I turned it on, and basically what it does is it turns the microphone on in your phone, and then you can hear what your phone does. So if you leave your phone somewhere and turn that on, you can actually hear what the phone is hearing at a further distance. So if you know, I was at church the other day, and I turned it on, and I just pointed the microphone from my phone towards the stage, and I could actually hear. Because listen, I read lips. That's my way of accommodating. I can't hear you, so I'm reading your lips, and I make do with that way. In Maskville, I can't hear anything. So it's you know, if I can't get the audio magnified, I just can't hear it, and I'm just so sick of not being able to hear stuff. But anyway, I wanted to mention that if you eventually, because we, you know, that the sophistication of technology in our earbuds are getting better, that I have a feeling that in the future those could very easily take the place of regular hearing aids, because they're digital, they're already hearing the stuff, there's already microphones, there's already quality speakers in there. You know, why not? You know, I'm putting together this little box that think of like mail slots where you have a lock and it's just a little slot. You go to a place like maybe the auditorium, you're doing a school play, or you're going to a place where there's theater going on, and you're hard of hearing. So you walk up to this little box, you open the little mail slot, you plug your lightning port in, the charging port in, and you pop your ear pods in, you turn the magnification in, and then you lock the little mail slot with your phone inside, and you walk away with the key. You go sit down, you enjoy the performance, and now the auditorium will take the output from the PA system and they'll play it through a speaker that's actually built into the box that you have your phone in. So you're getting a high fidelity output of what the mixing board is outputting, the programming mixing board, and your phone is actually picking up the audio that's being piped into that little box. And you have volume control already on your AirPods, so you can sit there and just listen to the magnified version of what's happening on stage. And it's probably, you know, better than if it was just sitting on your lap because, like I said, it's like 2 inches from a speaker. But I'm going to make a couple of these things, especially for like my church, because it's terrible. It's intimidating as crap, right? And it's annoying to not be able to hear stuff. I just, you know, I bolted out of church the other day because I thought one of the pastors was going to say something to me and I wouldn't have been able to hear him. And I'm not courageous enough to sit there and say, huh, a million times. It's just not me. And so I found myself, you know, jumping out of scenarios where I'm going to have to not hear people or ask them to repeat themselves. I just hate it. So anyway, this, again, if you're challenged in that department like I am, you can use your iPhone and your AirPods as little hearing devices to help you get around like normal people do. So again, little tip and trick. But this was a fun show. I love the contributions. I love that the depth of our audience stood in there and made some recommendations because it's encouraging for the rest of our listening audience that no matter what they ask, even if it's not in my wheelhouse, we open it up to the brilliance of the Youngstown area and somebody comes through with either text me or emailing me or calling up and sharing with it. And that's why I love living in this community. There is no lack of talent and intelligence in the Youngstown area. I love the work ethic. I love the genius. And, you know, I took it on upon myself to unearth it and give it sort of like a way to make a living. I want all of you geniuses out there to go make your living and to claim, you know, what's in store for you. Because a lot of geniuses are not coming up with ideas right now. And that's got to be frustrating. And they're not using it to make any money. And that's got to be frustrating. So we're going to unearth it and then put it to work. And give people a reason to stay in our communities. That's my goal. All right. Thanks again, everybody, for joining me for today. We'll be back next week for another couple episodes. You've now listened to the Youngstown Computer Show on 570 WKBN. Have a great week.